prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, August 16th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
We're still having nice days with gold. We have gold up 760, New York spot at 1347. We have silver up a penny, 1985. Platinum was up 8 at 1121. And palladium was up 10 at 705. Some pressure on the index today, down 0.81 on the index at 94.80, the USDX. Crude oil, 0.85 to the upside at 46.59. And the paper markets today, some pressure. Some final numbers are still coming through, but so it might change a little bit by the end of the program. But currently the Dow is looking down to be about 84 points, 18,552. The NASDAQ is down 35 points at 52.27. The S&P down 12 at 21.78. 10-year yield 1.58%, up 0.02. And you have the euro up, had a big climb in the euro, 0.86 at 1.13. And a little bit of pressure on the markets, and I saw some interesting numbers today. Let me see if I can go ahead and pull them up here. Well, we've talked about multinational corporations buying back their shares. You have buybacks. It's one of the main reasons the stock markets you've seen these gains to, you know, these highs, record highs. And again, it's due to stock buybacks from corporations. But they appear to be slowing down. Buybacks announced for the second quarter's earnings season between July 8th and yesterday, August 15th, totaled an average of $1.8 billion a day, the lowest volume in an earnings season since the summer of 2012. And this is according to TrimTab's investment research. And as I mentioned before, these share repurchases, they have been the key driver of the stock market rally. In the first 7 months of 2016, buybacks totaled $376 billion. That's down 21% from $478 billion in the first 7 months of last year. Equity buybacks last week totaled just $2.6 billion with record highs in U.S. stocks, triggering an increase in new equity offerings. So you have these corporate leaders that are becoming a little less enthusiastic about what they see in the future. This could be a little blip. Maybe they'll turn around and start buying, you know, gobs of shares back again. But what it tells me is perhaps they're pulling back because of what they see ahead in the future. But also at the end of any bull market, you know, you have, you know, the last group of people, the last phase of buyers that come in. They always come in at the top so for the market to turn around and crash, and they get hold, you know, they get caught holding an empty bag. But so this is what we could be seeing now, because we all know that these numbers are so unreal in the stock markets. According to Trim Tabs, just five companies have announced buybacks of more than $3 billion this earnings season. You have Biogen, Visa, CBS, American International Group, and 21st Century Fox. You know, they all range between $3 and $5 billion worth. Goldman Sachs said the analysts there said that the pace of buybacks is slowing due to high valuations, again, which suggests stocks can struggle to maintain their recent highs. So another sign, folks, this isn't going to last.
Billionaire George Soros apparently agrees. There's an article on Yahoo Finance that says billionaire Soros fund doubled down against the Standard & Poor's 500. It says during the second quarter, Soros put options on just over Soros bought put options on just over 1.9 million shares of Standard & Poor's 500, making it so he owns puts on just over 4 million shares of the exchange-traded fund. It's his fund's biggest holding in the filing so far. Puts are used for a downside bet. Buying these 500, these Standard & Poor 500 puts essentially gives Soros the right, but not the obligation, to sell them in the future. In other words, if the Standard & Poor 500 or the ETF that tracks it falls, Soros should make a nice profit. In other words, Soros is betting that the Standard & Poor's is going down. He's not locked into it heavily. He has the right to sell his stocks at apparently current prices at some point in the future, and he's betting prices are going to go down and he'll make money off the deal. But he doesn't have the obligation to do so. It really is a bet. The way I look at it, the way I understand it, and you can correct me on that, Melody, if you think puts are something other than a bet, but I think that's correct. Soros, widely known as the man who broke the Bank of England, he gave a grim speech at the European Union Parliament last June, I think, in which he warned that Brexit may be a greater calamity than the refugee crisis. He added that UK's shocking decision, the Brexit decision, unleashed a crisis in the financial markets comparable in severity only to that of 2007-2008. This crisis has been unfolding in slow motion, but Brexit has accelerated it. It's likely to reinforce the deflationary trends that were already present. I don't like Soros. I regard the man as despicable for a number of reasons, mainly because he's openly expressed a desire to destroy the United States of America. You know, I don't like the man, but you can't argue with his success and his track record. And he's one of these people. He is essentially betting Standard & Poor's is going down, and odds are, you know,
that's just chump change. Like I can't hold back anymore. That's just chump change for that guy.
It might be, but it's the same. He's making
change.
A bet.
And I mean, yeah. I'd like to see his other side of the bet. You know, and the only reason he made his fortunes, you know, betting on the, he destroyed their currency. He was behind the destruction of the currency so he could make those billions. And that's what he does to these countries. He goes in and destroys them and he becomes more wealthier. And, you know, he's behind so much of our problems. In fact, I saw an article today where his son is out there toting lunch with, you know, Hillary Clinton's VP selection. Yep. And, you know, it's just...
He's a man who's got too much money.
No,
live in a world where it's possible
for him. It's just not money. He's just like Michael Bloomberg, you know, in Pennsylvania, the attorney general. Yeah, she got, you know, she's, you know, probably going to prison for 7 to 14 years for perjury. And I can remember when she was elected that Bloomberg tossed a lot of campaign money in her direction.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. People like Bloomberg, Soros, they go around, they funnel their money through all these campaigns and get these people elected to, you know, push for their cause. And it's just... You know, so hope she gets this 14 years, and but
she'll have an opportunity to provide a lot of pro bono legal services while she's in the slammer for some of the people there that probably can't afford a private attorney.
So, you know, it's, you know, you but you know, Soros is my.
Well,
I can't think of anything.
Like
good
I say, I think the guy is despicable, but regardless, you can't. That being said, you still have to pay attention to what he's doing if you can find out what that is.
Yeah. Well,
he's not an idiot. He's a despicable old man, but he's not an idiot, at least not yet, so far as I'm able to understand. So you pay attention.
Well,
another leaf in the breeze.
He doesn't do any of the trading on his funds that he has. He's got, you know, other people who does it. He probably
he's still in control.
Yeah,
he's still ultimately in control. I mean, he's got people.
That's what they want everybody to believe.
Well, I believe
it. They want everybody to believe. Hey, the federal government's debt held by the public. That's topped $14 trillion for the first time in history. So
yay!
History marker.
Hey, we should break out the hats and the horns and rest of that sort of thing.
Bring out the champagne.
Yeah, I know.
And these were the latest numbers that were released by the U.S. Treasury. The close of business on August 10th, the debt held by the public was 13.9. I'm not going to go through the whole number. And it just keeps arising and arising. By the end of business on August 12th, it increased again. And so since Obama was inaugurated on January 20th, 2009, the federal government's debt held by the public was 6.3. I think that's 122%.
So it's doubled.
Yeah.
It's basically doubled since he's been there. And that's the national debt itself, regardless of whether it's held by the public or not, has gone from something like when he took office, it was 8 or 9 trillion, and now it's close to 20 trillion. So again, the debt has doubled better than doubled. And, you know, you have to look at that and think to yourself, you know, you can write these numbers off and not pay much attention to them. Say, well, okay, it doubled. You know, hooray, who cares? But it's doubled. We've gone deeper into debt in the past 8 years than we did in the previous 200. That tells us that the economy is so desperate, it's been on life support for the last 8 years. And the debt has been essentially a kind of blood transfusion that's been given to this ailing economy. But you have to look at these numbers and think to yourself, is this economy going to survive this? Is all this debt going to be enough to revive the economy and make it strong again? Or is it evidence that we're going to run out of blood plasma here in the near future and we won't have any more to inject into the economy's veins, and what happens then? It's an extraordinary, just an extraordinary phenomena that the debt has doubled in 8 years as compared to built up to $8-9 trillion over 200 years, and now in 8 years it's gone up to close to $20 trillion. And that's the official debt. And there's other people who say the debt is perhaps $100 trillion, $200 trillion real debt, including unfunded liabilities, maybe far more than what they're reporting to us. It tells you, if you care to pay attention, that this economy is just skating on the thinnest of ice, and all of which leads to the, you know, leads to a conclusion. You know, the probability that it's not going to get through this unscathed is high. It might happen, might get through unscathed, but it's not likely. It can't be when this, if and when the debt hits the fan, and that's what's going to happen here, in my opinion, that's what the debt will hit the fan, and when people finally realize the debt can't be paid, then everything begins to fall apart. People are going to scream in shock. They say, oh my gosh, how could this have happened? Why didn't anyone tell me? Look, it's common knowledge. This isn't a secret. The debt doubled in the past 8 years. And people are just blasé about this. They don't know, oh, big deal, the debt doubled. You know, maybe it could triple or quadruple. What difference does it make? I think it does make a difference. You can't just go from 200 years generating $8 trillion official debt to $20 trillion official debt in 8 years. You have to look at this and say, this economy is running on crack. This economy is running on coke. This economy is running on amphetamines. And left to its own devices, maybe it doesn't run right.
Lost in space. Will Roberts. This does not compute.
Yeah,
remember that program?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will Roberts. This does not compute.
Danger. Danger. Danger.
Danger. Yeah. We ought to have that for one of our break things.
That probably is. That's probably a good idea.
Hey, today the SEC is sad. It's kind of, you know, the SEC suspends the stock after it skyrockets 463. It's Neuromama. They had these grand ambitions. They were going to be a search engine, social network. This little company was going to build 39 casinos in Mexico, a power plant. It was going to provide electricity and water to satisfy 10 million people. Gee, who wouldn't want that share? But, you know, just like anything else, it's a what they call a pink sheet stock. It's not registered with the SEC, New York Stock Exchange, or the NASDAQ. And, you know, it went up 463% in the past 8 months. It's sports a market valuation of $35 billion. The reason I bring this up is here's a case where if anybody invested in this, do you think even though it's gone up 463%, do you think anybody got their money out? You know, here you have the SEC shuts it down. You know, there's going to be some litigation. I mean, there's cause of concern that, you know, this company didn't have anything. I mean, heck, in 2013, it just listed a little under $5,000 in assets. You know, now all of a sudden it's, you know, listed as $35 billion. And, again, these, I mean, these pink sheet stocks, they do have the opportunity for real returns. They tend to be smaller cap companies and illiquid. And so when you hear these things, and I see them and I read them all the time about people promising you these gains of 300, 500, 800%, you got to look a little bit deeper than just someone's pitch and promises of 800 and 700% gains when it comes to these papers. On paper, you could look like, hey, man, I just made, you know, $1 billion, but try to get it. See how liquid it is.
But I'm going to hold on until I get $2 billion. A billion is not enough. I'm going to hold on until I get $2 billion.
So again,
and maybe I'll even hold on until I get $5 billion, which means in the end you'll get nothing. But I think we got a break, Melody. We have time for commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
Hey. As men get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We're going to continue the special from yesterday, $20 face value of 90% silver, along with a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, and includes your shipping cost for $476. Remember, folks, gold's up $760, and silver's even up a little bit today. So same price as yesterday. Pick it up. $20 face value, 90% silver, a 10th ounce American Gold Eagle, $476. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
You know, you're talking about a stock that had increased in value or apparent value by 400-500%. We've seen something like that with Bitcoin, digital currency, cryptocurrency. I don't even know if it may be far more than 400-500%. It's 400-500%, perhaps, just in the last couple of years. You take it from the beginning, it has been a spectacular investment. All right, it's a gambling situation, in my opinion, but it's just the same. It's been a spectacular investment, but it is not, you know, absolutely safe. There's an article from the Hacker News, which is really a good magazine, remarkably good magazine. And they're talking about how people are hacking into computers and one thing and another. I mean, they've got some extraordinary stories, and it's not some fringe. This is a legitimate magazine following what happens in the Hacker News. And the article is entitled, Bitcoin Exchange Offers $3.5 million reward for information on the $72 million worth of stolen bitcoins. As you may know, Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency that exists in digital form. Some people say it's a new form of money likely to sweep the world. Others disagree precisely because it is only digital and therefore hackable. Hong Kong-based Bitcoin exchange Bitfinex revealed on August 2nd that the cryptocurrency exchange has suffered a major security breach, which resulted in the loss of merely 120,000 Bitcoin units. Bitfinex had lost about $72 million worth of customers' bitcoins and is now offering a reward of $3.5 million to anyone who can provide information that leads to the recovery of the stolen bitcoins. So, Melody, if you got any clues, now's the time. You know, $3.5 million reward if you know who stole the bitcoins. The hack led to a 36% loss for each Bitfinex customer. Will be issued tokens to be redeemed as the company is able to reimburse the losses. There's clearly a lot of money, a lot of apparent money floating around in bitcoins and cryptocurrency. If they can afford a $3.5 million reward after $72 million worth of bitcoins disappeared, it implies that they've got some serious money involved in this, but just the same, each of the customers for Bitfinex at this particular exchange, they lost 36% of their investment, and they're going to be issued tokens.
Isn't that grand?
Be redeemed. And whenever the company is able to reimburse them. Here's your token. You can use these at Starbucks. All right. You take your tokens down to Starbucks and you may be able to pass them off for a cup of coffee or whatever.
And then that's only when we can that's when we have the money to give you the token.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That'll keep them out of the courts for a while.
It does not inspire confidence, and that's the problem with a digital form of wealth. I don't care what anyone says, it cannot be secured. There is no security on the internet. There is not a computer. If you're tied into the internet, you can be hacked. There's not a computer. There's not a program that cannot be hacked. And that being the case, it's one of the reasons why if you really want to preserve your wealth, you're going to think twice about storing it in digital format. Not merely because hackers can come get it, but some people are concerned that if the government gets into a bigger bind than it's already in, the government and or the banks may have to take money out of your bank account, which is easily done because it's digital. It's pretty much just a matter of pushing a button. Here, push this button. And all of a sudden, we take billions of dollars from people that have stored it in their bank accounts. Or the banks take billions or whatever. But
when the government needs your money, all of a sudden they'll just do a couple of clicks, your money will be gone. Oh, we were hacked. Yeah. Government will take it intentionally, but they'll tell you were hacked.
Yes, bad news, folks. You were hacked.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, you were hacked. They have an article in Bitcoin, in fact, that apparently there's a report that hackers, private hackers, right, that they have hacked into the National Security Agency's hacker unit. National Security Agency has its own group of hackers, all right, who have devised very sophisticated programs for breaking into other people's computers and contaminating them with viruses and whatever. Well, a group of private hackers, one or more, maybe it was one, maybe it was a group, nobody knows, but they have hacked into the NSA hackers' computers and run off with a bunch of these sophisticated hacker programs, some of which they are now making available for free over the internet. And if you want more, they've got the better programs. They're still hanging on to those, and they're asking, I think, $368 million to release the rest of the super programs developed by the National Security Agency to be used to hack into other people's computers. You want them? Got an extra $368 million. We can make this happen. I don't know what they're even thinking about, but it's more evidence. The National Security Agency is not even safe from hackers.
I think I told you, Al, one night I couldn't sleep. I turned on, you know, television, and there was this program on there about a show. I think it's called Mr. Robot. And it's about hacking. And the producer of the program, producer, director, he said a lot of their material that they actually show on screen actually is a sequence for hacking. And the program is very real. A lot of it is very real as far as, I don't know, for lack of a better, you know, description, the hacking world. And he says what he has learned since they've done this program, and he's learned about hacking, he said he wouldn't put his name on the internet.
Well, I understand. None of it's safe.
He wouldn't put his name on the internet.
Yeah. I understand, which again brings you back, what do you want to do with your wealth?
I was always a little skeptical a little bit on the hacking, because I saw something many years ago that they promote a lot of hacking, so, you know, people get, you know, concerned, and, you know, they try to do all these things and join up with all these different programs. And in fact, it joining up on these programs made them even more,
more vulnerable,
more vulnerable to the hacking. So, and they says a lot of what you hear, I think it was more identity theft at that point in time. It wasn't as real or it wasn't as severe as what they led you to believe. So I always sort of thought that about hacking too. It's, you know, when they say, oh yeah, Russia hacked into this, it's like, well, you know,
Russia, China, the United States,
I'm
Israel,
you
I'm going to assume European
because
nations,
if they
whatever.
Hacked my ideas, if they were hacking, you would never know it. You know, they're not going to release the information saying that. And to me, if Russia hacked into the NSA, to me, isn't that sort of like
not Russia hacking into the NSA. We're talking about private hackers. If I were a hacker.
I'm giving that as an example. You know, if Russia or anybody, any foreign country hacked into our military like they've said they've done and so forth, wouldn't that be an act of war?
Yeah, I guess it is if you can prove it. But we live in a situation where, how do you prove it? It's like Hillary Clinton claimed it was.
They prove it enough that they can say so-and-so did it. They have to have some sort of proof if they're going to lay claim that somebody actually did it.
Who even knows? I mean, this is the sort of thing, these kinds of hacking offenses are being perpetrated by people who are so brilliant.
I get that.
You don't know who they are. They can appear to be Russians, and they might be Ugandans. You got a genius down in Uganda. He can hack into these things. And they are smarter than any of the politicians, any of the police, any of the law enforcement can possibly imagine. They're not going to be. I mean, this is not like catching a guy who's holding up a 7-Eleven.
Well, that was
these guys
point.
Are brilliant. Well,
that was my point. So how do they? You know, when you hear them say that,
Even know. I mean, that's another thing. Oh dear, you'll never guess what, Melody. They hacked into my computer and they stole the $1 million that you'd sent over to me as a cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you know who hacked into the computer? How do you know I didn't take the money? It becomes one of these things where how do you trust anyone who's in a position to hit the keyboard on that operates some of these computers?
And
some
that's
of these
why
people
you
are
buy
so smart. If you want to protect your wealth, you're going to look for something that's not digital. All right?
Gold and silver.
Exactly. Physical gold and silver. Not digital, not paper. Physical gold and silver. In order to protect yourself from this kind of, you know, we see millions individuals' credit card information gets picked up and hacked from Target, if I recall correctly, 6 months ago, thereabouts. There have been a number of them. They don't just hack into a computer anymore in the sense that they might hack into my computer.
right, and look around for some information or evidence of currency or whatever. They're going ahead. They're going after commercial entities, and they're trying to download millions of files at the same time. And like this Bitcoin, somebody stole $72 million worth of Bitcoins, and Bitcoin doesn't even know where to find them, which strikes me as strange because it seems like they should be trackable, but nevertheless, they've just disappeared. $72 million. And this may be the work of one man. It might even be the work of one boy. You got some kid out there in eighth grade or something who's really clever and really understands computers. He can go, guess what, Mom? I just stole $72 million. Well, Johnny, you better send that back, or at least most of it. We'll keep, you know.
Well, another theft that I believe is Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like Aetna is looking to dump Obamacare in all but four states.
I understand.
For next year.
And they're not the only one.
No.
Aetna's, this is from Yahoo Finance. Aetna's dumping Obamacare in all but four states for 2017. The Aetna Health Insurance insurer said that it will offer individual Affordable Care Act exchange plans in just four states, down from 15 this year, in an effort to reduce its $200 million losses for the second quarter of 2016. And the spokesman said, Chairman and CEO Mark Bertolini, he said in a statement, as a strong supporter of public exchanges as a means to meet the needs of the uninsured, we regret having to make this decision. Oh, bunk. The uninsured don't have any money. That's the problem. And they're not going to get served because they don't have any money. As a strong supporter of public exchanges, it's just razzle-dazzle. But the insurance giant says it will offer ACA exchange plans in Delaware, Iowa, Nebraska, and Virginia, slashing its Obamacare footprint by 70% next year. It will offer ACA Affordable Care Act plans in just 242 counties nationally, down from nearly 780 this year. Humana has also announced that it will sharply cut back from the exchanges. Its pullback in the wake of United Health's department from all but a handful of exchanges means that hundreds of thousands of Obamacare plan members will no longer have access to plans from the nation's three major insurance insurers in 2017. So the question is, what does it mean? If three major health insurance companies are backing out of Obamacare after Obamacare has been effective for about 6 years, it means, the answer to that question, it means that some of the financial premises on which Obamacare was based have turned out to be false. Whatever the insurance companies bought into, whatever they expected, it turns out they're losing money. And they didn't expect that. Right? Something is wrong here. Now, as a result, and it's based on false financial premises. Somebody said, oh, you can make a bunch of money. And they said, oh, yeah, count us in. But now it turns out, oh, you can't make a bunch of money. And so they're saying, count us out. As a result of these false premises, Obamacare is not working as well as many had hoped. We're left to wonder how many other premises will turn out to be false and how much more of Obamacare will be rescinded by the logic of the markets. It's going to happen. Watch and see. The talk about busting the Congress is going to turn down Obamacare. It may be that the markets actually put Obamacare down before the Congress ever gets to it. Take a break. More commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Afraid of pain. No one wants pain to rule over their life. and you don't want the negative side effects of aspirin, ibuprofen, or prescription drugs. They can lower immunity and cause dependency. Is there a safe alternative? I'm herbalist Wendy Wilson, and I prefer willow bark and meadowsweet herbs to control pain, fever, aches, and inflammation. God's herbs are good, and you won't be disappointed. Call Apothecary Herbs for pain or extra strength pain relief formula, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International, 704-875-8010, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and here's another leaf in the breeze. You believe the global economy is doing well or likely to do well in the near future? Here's three different articles from Ms. Shedlock's Global Economic Analysis, and they deal with shipping. And the first one, I'm just going to basically touch on the headlines. The headline is Peak Season Shipping Roundup, Long Beach Port Traffic Down 7.7%. The Port of Long Beach posts a 7.7% drop in container volumes compared to July of 2015. The port attributes the decline to high inventory levels and a slow start to the peak season. This is evidence that, you know, we are in a kind of recession. It's not absolute proof, but if the amount of goods we're bringing in from China, for example, is down 7.7% as compared to the month of July a year ago, that indicates the economy is slowing. Here's the next headline. Intermodal shipping. Traffic suffers first dip in 25 quarters. Intermodal freight transport. And we're going to define that. What we're talking about are our shipping containers. Intermodal freight transport involves the transportation of freight in an intermodal container or vehicle using multiple modes of transportation, rail, ship, and truck. What they mean by that, we can take the same box that we've filled up with goods in China and we've transported across the ocean on a ship, and then it can be put on a truck, and the truck can haul it off to a railroad where it is put on a railroad car, and it stays in the same box. The goods stay in the same box the whole time, and they're all headed toward a single destination. They all stay in the same box. It creates more security. It's easier for doing things, and they track things. How many of these boxes are we moving at a time? So they're saying intermodal freight transport involves transportation of freight, intermodal container or vehicle, using multiple modes of transportation, rail, ship, and truck, without any handling of the freight itself when changing modes. The doors stay locked on the containers. Okay, you don't handle the freight. You just move the boxes. This method reduces cargo handling and so improves security, reduces damages and loss, and allows freight to be transported faster. Reduced costs over road trucking is the key for intercontinental use. Overall intermodal traffic in North America fell 6.1% in the second quarter of 2016. This is the first volume decline in 25 consecutive quarters. That's 6.25 years. And this is according to data from the Intermodal Association of North America. North America in intermodal volumes in the second quarter fell by 6.1% to 4.27 million units compared to the prior year, while the international shipments fell 9.3%. When the shipping is down, it's evidence that we are in something like a recession, maybe a depression. And here's the one that rings my bell more than anything else, perhaps. It says, the headline says, lack of shipping demand sends big ships to scrap heap. The Wall Street Journal reports about 1,000 ships that have the combined capacity to haul 52 million metric tons of cargo will be dragged onto beaches, cut into pieces, and sold for scrap metal this year. This is second only to the record amount of capacity of 61 million so-called deadweight tons that were scrapped and recycled in 2012. The implication is that if the shipping industry is selling 1,000 ships for scrap, that's evidence that they do not expect a sudden improvement in shipping rates. We're not going to sell. I'm not going to go out there and destroy a dump truck. If I own a dump truck, it might be beat up. It might be old. But just the same, if there's a big demand for hauling things, then I can make money on my rickety old dump truck. But if I sit back and I look at circumstances and I say, nah, that dump truck's inefficient and the demand is so low that nobody's going to want it, I might as well junk it. All right. That's what they're doing in the shipping industry. They're junking 1,000 ships, and they do not anticipate a sudden improvement in shipping rates. A global recession and or depression is here and unlikely to leave in the foreseeable future. Global trade is down, and it can't be good for the global economy. It's evidence that we are having a decline. And it even is evidence that U.S. economy is in a state of decline rather than recovery. So three articles from Ms. Shedlock and his global economic analysis and just evidence. You know, it's we could call this the bear news, meaning B-E-A-R. You just keep getting this news and news and news that there is going to almost certainly be some sort of a significant decline in the economy in the foreseeable future. Might start this year, might start next year. Nobody knows, but it looks like it's close. And again, that's a reason for people to govern themselves accordingly. Get ready. Prepare. Right? Could be big trouble headed your way. What else, Melody?
Well, you know, the other day we were talking about commercial real estate, shopping malls and so forth, with the likes of having Coach closing 250 stores, Sears, Kmart, and we talked about what it would happen to, that commercial. We talked about commercial real estate being overbuilt. Now you're beginning to hear a lot about luxury units, apartment building. Where they're struggling to rent these units, and they have basically flooded downtowns across the country in the last several years. And even though we have sort of a shortage of multifamily homes in the suburbs, that has driven up these rents also. Since 2012, the nation's supply of apartments has swelled 16.6%. in central business districts and 13.5% in secondary core areas surrounding the downtowns. But when you look at these new apartments nationally, new apartments had an average 52% vacancy when they opened up in the first quarter of 2013. It did fall a little bit, but in the luxury area, they're looking in your downtown areas They're actually increasing quite a bit. Many of them stand vacant. Kind of reminds me of China's.
That's exactly what was crossing my mind. Yeah. They're putting up, oh, China's so crazy. They're building these empty cities, new cities. Nobody lives there. Well, you know, here we are. We're not exactly building empty cities, but we're building apartment complexes that may wind up empty for a while.
And now what they're doing is they're offering these incentives, you know, just to get people in there, you know, free rent for 6 weeks and this and that. So now you're going to get a lot of people in there that probably can't afford them. And, you know, it's just a temporary Band-Aid over, you know, a problem that we're going to face. Builder told me once, he says, being in the construction business, you build.
Yeah.
You know, you don't worry about whether it can be sold or whether you can fill it as a rental or whatever. He says, you just build. You just keep building.
Well, that's a good theory. That's a good theory.
They keep borrowing money.
Yeah, as long as you can borrow money and you can find someone who's willing to, you know, you've got to sell it to someone.
Well, I think
if you're going to build an apartment complex, unless you're going to run it yourself, I doubt that the construction people are operating their own apartment complexes, so they are anticipating somebody's got to be buying this, financing it, whatever.
Well, I think a lot of these luxury apartments were being built in the anticipation that, you know, hey, the economy's getting better. They need to listen to our program.
I agree. They get overly optimistic and not, you know, we talk to people on a regular basis. So you got to look at this with your own two eyes. You've got to trust what you see with your own two eyes and become objective rather than greedy or fearful.
You know what that really
is? Say, what is the truth here?
You know what that really is? Just so wrong. I mean, if you truly have these business people who make decisions based on what they get from all these reports being produced by the government, and they make business decisions based on rosy numbers and everything goes well, and next thing you know, you fall into you have this crisis. You know, I mean, look at the lives that are affected by these, you know,
well,
by these bad reports, by these lies.
I understand, but this is
of these reports.
To me, this is a consequence of living in a debt-based monetary system and a debt-based economy. We need debt to fuel this economy.
Yeah.
It's not fueled by assets. It's fueled by debt. What is debt? It's a promise to pay.
And that's fine.
And it's multiplied. The reason the debt is so important, it's a debt-based economy, in my opinion, is because fractional reserve banking allows you to put one promise for, say, $1 million. I promise to pay $1 million, sign my name to a piece of paper, and the bank puts it in the bank vault. They say, well, we've got a bond here from Mr. Addisk, and it says $1 million. Under fractional reserve banking, in theory, they can lend $9 million out to the public. Use my bond, which is nothing but a promise to pay. It can be used to justify lending for shopping, to building shopping centers, to buying automobiles, building new homes, furnishing apartments, whatever. When people are building shopping centers or building apartment complexes, they inevitably go into debt. They create these debt instruments, which they need to fuel the debt-based monetary system. They don't care if you build totem poles. Right? As long as you're going into debt and creating more debt instruments that they might be able to use to fuel the system. Now, the problem is you are being encouraged. It's like subprime borrowers with the mortgage system we had, with the mortgage problem we had back that triggered the recession of 2008, 2009. The subprime, they really couldn't pay the bills. And when that finally became apparent, all of a sudden the whole economy of the world very nearly collapsed. Huh? This is based on lies. I promise. I'm going to send you $1 million. The check is in the mail. All right? I promise. The subprime more borrowers, they promised. The government encourages the promises because they're betting that the multiplication factor in fractional reserve banking will take those promises and stimulate the economy and make everybody happy again. Well, it's not working. All right? And sooner or later, they're going to find out, wait a second, these promises can't be kept. They're based on presumptions that are untrue. And the government has helped make those untruths palatable and believable because they wanted the debt instruments. They have value. And so they fed lies to the public. If you're dealing with assets, you deal with the truth. How much gold you got? How many ounces? All right? That's a fact, not a promise. It's how many do you have? How many do you want? How many can you pay? Show me the money. Don't show me the IOU. Don't show me a debt instrument and a promise to pay. Show me a payment, gold coin, silver coin, something real. When you do that, you're not living in a world based on lies. It might not be as flashy, but it's far more solid. And sooner or later, we're going to be driven back to a real world that's not based on mere promises, mere debts. I mean, how hard is it to promise to send somebody $100, $1,000, $1,000,000? It's only a promise. That's what a debt instrument is. It's easy to make promises. It's hard to make gold coins. Somebody's got to work to produce the gold and work to produce the coins. There is a reality that's associated with those tangible items of wealth that doesn't even apply in the debt-based monetary system. So we're in that. We're in that debt-based monetary system. It's crazy. We shouldn't be here. Constitution says we have to use gold and silver coin. We're ignoring that. Nevertheless, you know, we don't pay attention to the Constitution, and we're going to be astonished. The world will be astonished when the debt hits the fan. But it will. And when it does, those of us who still have a little gold are going to find it extraordinarily valuable. And you're going to be able to buy things with gold coins that you can barely imagine buying today. Everything else will be cheap. The gold will be valuable and expensive, and you'll be able to make some tremendous purchases if you're inclined to do so. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.